Blog Talk Radio.
If people say your dreams are crazy, if they laugh at what you think you can do, good. Because calling a dream crazy is not an insult, it's a compliment. Don't try to be the fastest in your school, be the fastest ever. Don't believe you have to be like anybody to be somebody. Don't become the best basketball player on the planet. Be bigger than basketball. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. If you have only one hand, don't just watch football, play. And if you're a girl from Compton, become the greatest athlete ever. Yeah, that's more like it. So don't ask if your dreams are crazy. Ask if they're crazy enough.
Big exclusives.
Please don't forget to subscribe to this channel now.
Now, welcome your host, Valerie Denise Jones.
Yes, yes, yes. Everybody's in the building. I see. The lines are lit up, and I'm really, really excited. Big exclusive, Valerie Denise Jones, special edition. We got Bishop Scott in the house. He's going to do his thing on the other side of the break. So, yeah, I hope you are ready. For a great show. 929-477-1167. 929-477-1167. Please, please, please make sure that if you decide to press the number one to join in today's conversation, make sure that your background noise is at a minimum. So guys, pray for me because I got a little bit of a delay going on here. Kind of threw me off just a little bit, but I'm back on track. I hope you enjoyed that audio clip. That was the one and only Colin Kaepernick reminding us to dream big, big, like big exclusive, big media, big head media, all the great things that we're doing this year and the stuff that we're going to discuss today. We got some beautiful big personalities on the line today. So without further ado, what I am about to do is I am going to cut to a quick commercial break, if I can find it. Oh my God, here we go. Yes, there we are. Let's support Black-owned businesses, Black people, Black everything. We are unapologetically Black today, hereafter, and forever. All right, guys, I will see you on the other side.
Throughout history, there's always been the same question. How come Black people don't seem to get further on the economic scale? This is a question with multiple answers. First, comes slavery. Second, not knowing our history. And last, not sticking together. There's a beautiful African proverb that we unfortunately seem to forget. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. This quote still stands for today. If we as Black people want to get higher on the economic ladder, so where do we start? Well, by supporting Black-owned businesses. Money is not the solution to our problems, but a tool to build our own economy. The time is now to support Black-owned businesses. Black Economic Network, where Black-owned businesses come together.
We're always interested in what you have to say about our live broadcasts.
Please share your comments on our Facebook page or websites.
All right, guys, we're back. Big exclusive, special edition. See, Honorable Bishop Scott is in the building. There are a lot of calls that just popped up on the board. 267-867, you are live. Wow, wow, wow. Happy Tuesday to you. How are you tonight, Bishop? Here is your applause. I am so off right now.
God bless you, Valerie.
Yes, God bless you. I received that. Thank you, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm blessed. Looking forward to the program tonight. And I thank you for allowing me the opportunity to host this particular program.
Yeah,
and I thank all of my guests as well. and those who are on the line and everyone who's listening. I thank God for each and every one of you.
Thank you. So we do have Philo the Great in the building and Rhonda Supreme and Judge Joe Brown. Everybody's here and accounted for, so we are ready to get this party started. So I am going to just fall back and let you do your thing because you're the best at it. So, yeah, you can take it from here.
Okay, thank you, Valerie, and welcome to the guests, Judge Brown, and to my sister, and to Philip Driscoll. God bless you, Rhonda Supreme, Fairley Tharp, and God bless everyone who's on the program this evening. I know my wife is listening, as well as so many others, and we thank God for each and every one of you. Tonight we're going to be dealing with a topic I entitled Divided Loyalties, Black or Democrat. Divided loyalties, black or Democrat. I'm going to give a little preface to all that we're going to be discussing tonight. I hope that everyone, all of the guests, receive their the questions. Some of the questions, well, the questions actually that we will be dealing with, we're going to elaborate a little bit on it. But each of you receive them. Judge Brown? Is Judge Brown on?
Yes, I was muted. They unmuted me. Go right ahead. I'm ready to rock. Okay.
Okay, okay, Judge Brown. God bless you. Good to hear
how
from
you
always.
Bishop?
Oh, blessed. How about you?
You?
I'm blessed. What about you?
I'll make it.
I know you will. I know you will. And to Philip Driscoll?
Yes.
You there? Hello
yes.
there. Philo the Great. God bless you.
How you doing? How you doing?
Oh, blessed. Blessed, blessed. I'm glad you're with us this evening. And to my sister, Rhonda Supreme. Rhonda Supreme, Shirley Thorpe.
How
you doing, my dear?
I'm wonderful.
Glad you could make
and
it
yes,
as well.
I did receive it. I did receive your questions.
Good, good, good. And we're going to elaborate. We're going to want you to elaborate on them as we come to them. But I just want to give a little preface, a little statement, I guess, of facts, and then we go right into the questions. The first thing I'm going to say is since the administration of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who served the nation from 1933 to 1945, African Americans have been faithful voting members of the Democratic Party. Roosevelt's New Deal programs helped end the horrific economic conditions brought on because of the Great Depression, and he and Congress put Americans back to work, including Negroes, quote, Negroes in America. Since the 1930s, the Democratic Party could count on the black vote. Our loyalty has been unswerving and undeniable. For years, black people voted for the party's endorsed candidates solely because the party asked us to. The Democrats have been so confident in the black support that rarely have they felt the need or the obligation to include within the party's official platform the platform, which is the standard bearers of the party's priority. And honestly, we as black folk have not made this a requirement for us supporting the parties whose logo it is, the jackass. Now, let me say this again and elaborate a little bit on this. They have been so confident in our support that they have rarely, if ever, put our sole priorities and our conditions and our causes and our issues in the platform. They've very rarely done that. And we have been guilty of allowing them to get away with it. I myself have been guilty of being a staunch Democrat and have often voted the straight ticket from 1972 when I pulled the lever to vote for Edmund Muskie to the second term of Barack Obama. My loyalty to the Democratic Party has rarely gone unbroken. This changed last election cycle, however, in 2016, largely because of my disenchantment with Obama's lack of earnest concern for the black community during his 8-year presidency and dubious history that the Clintons have when dealing with black Americans and the way Hillary ran as an established Democrat who used her political influence to undermine her greatest competitor, Senator Bernie Sanders, whose politics was so much like my own that I voted for him in the presidential primaries. Because of these and other issues I had with Hillary, I decided to vote for the Green Party candidate, Jill Stein. When I look back at the interaction between the blacks in America and the Democratic Party, my mind goes back to Malcolm X and his speech in terms of House Negro and Field Negro. And you know, I know many of you are familiar with that. And I thought I had that with me. But nevertheless, it dealt with the difference between the House Negro and the Field Negro. Malcolm X in 1963 said that the House Negro was one that that really was so enthralled with his master, so willing to appease his master, that everything that the master had, everything that the master owned, everything that the master was, he identified with it. Even to the point when the master got sick, the master said, "I'm sick." "Oh yeah, we sick, master." And so this kind of mentality I see even in within the black community as it relates to the Democratic Party. We have been so, I think, so assimilated within the party, so much entrenched in the party, that we very seldom even critique the party in its dubious, if not anti-black spirit that it often has. Only once did a Democratic president promote, support, and sign into law legislation that solely had improving the lives of African Americans in mind. And that president, ironically, was a white Southern Democrat by the name of Lyndon Baines Johnson, who served from 1963 to 1968. At no other time, before or since, has politics been made and policies been made and acted and enforced to bring equity and justice to the African-American community alone. Policies like the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and the Fair Housing Act of 1967. Naturally, over the years, other disenfranchised groups have also benefited from these legislative actions. But the intent of President Johnson was to bring to equity and to justice the mistreatment and the maltreatment that African Americans have had throughout the history of this nation. Think of that. It has been over 50 years ago since the Democratic Party stood unapologetically and aggressively on behalf of black America. Tonight, our panelists and I will be looking at the past and present ideas and thoughts as to their thoughts on the black community and the Democratic Party. So I'm going to ask each of you these questions, and I want you to answer them concisely but comprehensively. The first question I want to ask my panelists, once again, Judge Joe Brown, Philip Driscoll, my sister, Rhonda Supreme Fairley Tharp. The first question, and I want Judge Brown to begin answering this particular question. We as a people have been Democrat longer than any of us have even been alive. In your opinion, what do you see as being the pros and cons in our historical links with the Democratic Party? Judge Brown, would you answer that question for us? Judge Brown?
Here. I was on mute.
Did you hear the question?
I heard the question. I just didn't want to add any flack to the recording.
I got you.
I've been told not to do. So anyway, it seems that you have so eloquently put it, Bishop. Our interest became coincidental with the Democratic Party with the advent of FDR's New Deal. We got something out of that. We certainly got something out of Harry Truman. what with the executive act he signed into order in 1981, which was the order that integrated the armed services, and his attendance as the first U.S. president to go to an NAACP convention, which at the time, the NAACP was a very viable organization. So LBJ, as you pointed out, delivered a lot, and he is my favorite president, at least those that I have voted for in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Mine too.
And we got some economic benefit during the first portion of Clinton's campaign because the economy had been reduced to a sorry state as to ordinary people during the Reagan and first Bush administrations. Since that, we have gotten nothing. And my personal opinion coincides with yours, and that is, you have to look into matters of state with the long view. Perhaps it would be best to back out of the Democratic Party for now and let them go flat without us. Next time around, we might get more respect for our interests. As well, we might be courted vigorously by the GOP if they see our availability, and they might also support our interests. The problem is, as you've said about that is reflected in Malcolm's comment about House Negroes, is that no one is aware that we have interests that are separate and apart for their own. We are, after all, the original House Negroes who've historically identified with those interests of the masters. So we've got to back out of this because we vote for these people in the Democratic Party and we get absolutely nothing. And we get insulted by a party that is in a position holding the majority of the House and the Senate at the time, when we have problems with employment, education, prison reform, all sorts of things, and they waste 16 months of political capital before the 2016 election arguing about who gets to piss in the girls' bathroom. That is just a disgrace that our support has been tendered for such superfluous reasons. Mm. Now, we just need to bail the heck out of that and go. I couldn't support Hillary Clinton because I remember back in 64 when she was a senior in high school like I was, and she was a Goldwater girl reporting that Republican racist Barry Goldwater, who was the first candidate for president to pull the race card out of the hat in a long time. And then I can remember in 66 when Senator Bernie Sanders was in Chicago trying to get himself sent to jail often, going after this official segregation at the University of Illinois on their Chicago campus, which officially segregated black students. And her out there on a picket line in support of the segregation, and also with her parents out there when King came at the end of 66, early 67, still supporting segregation in suburban Chicago housing. And then in 68, she was running around the country campaigning for Richard Tricky Dick Nixon, I Am Not a Crook, and had been campaigning for St. Ron the Ragon out in California. She was chairman for the 4 years she was in college at Wesley Girls School, chairman of the Young Republicans. So she's got a bastard history as far as I'm concerned, and she can go to hell because I'm not supporting Missy just because she's married to somebody that black folk thought was so hip because he played the saxophone. Now, And then the last somebody we had in the White House, you've ever seen how George W. is always coming over to Michelle and giving her candy and everything? That's because the Bushes and the Sotoros, that's Barry Sotoro's adopted name since he got adopted by Lola Sotoro. And who's Barry Sotoro? That's Barack Obama, a.k.a. And the Sotoros and the Bushes were lifetime family friends. The first picture I can find of them, Barry Sotoro, a.k.a. Barack Obama, is standing next to a golf cart when he's about 7 or 8 years old with George W.'s arm around him while Daddy George Herbert Walker Bush is talking to Daddy Lolo Sotoro on a golf course. That's how far back they go. And we got that fraud perpetrated on us like he's one of us. Now, they've got a saying, and I'll cut it off with this, ADOS, African Descendants of Slaves. And Barack Obama was not an ADOS because he had none. And we've got a witch who's out there running right now, Kamala Harris, who is also not an ADOS.
Well, Judge Brown, we're going to talk about our support.
We're going to talk about Kamala Harris.
Yeah, one of our questions will be about Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
So just hold on to that because we're going
to
talk about the two black candidates,
that,
Kamala Harris and Cory Booker.
Okay, Rhonda, why don't you chime in right now?
Okay, yes, I'm here. Those good points. I see it like this. First of all, the Democratic Party, for us as a whole, has actually fostered our dependence on the government, its social system, its services, its programs.
Yes.
And we're comfortable now with getting assistance. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I would say that a lot of people actually want the assistance as opposed to working or, you know, maybe even starting their own businesses. They're comfortable with it. They're accustomed to it. It's a generational thing. So that's one problem. And the problem I see that started, I would say, in probably the late 60s, early 70s, is that those social programs separated husband and wife and destroyed and you know, just separated black families because of the, I would say, the way the rules were set up. You know, the way that the mother was not allowed to have a man in the home in order to get assistance with food programs and things like that. So that right there started a whole problem in itself that really continues today. So that is another issue altogether. But I want to just say that we complain with every president that's been elected, whether it's Democrat, whether it's Republican, we complain with every president that's elected the same complaint: no one is doing enough for us. Okay, now, why would a system of white supremacy and black oppression assist us in overcoming our plight? That's the biggest question. Why would they do that? Because our plight is necessary for their survival and their power. So we're fooling ourselves if we think otherwise, honestly. You know, our uplifting does not benefit those in power in any way at all. You know, those in power, I would say, you know, they allow a certain number of black Americans to obtain financial success. They give us the facade of power so that the rest of the community will say, oh, you know, I can achieve the American dream because look at this person and look at that person. They did.
Yes.
But
yes.
Honestly, the American dream is just what it says. It's a dream. It's not set up for us at all. And that's where we have to realize that neither party is for us. And I agree with Judge Joe Brown. Like, we need to step away, maybe even form our own party, because neither one is for us.
Well, thank you, Ron. I appreciate that. And that's a very good point that both you and Judge Brown made, that we need to not look at any of these parties that are now in existence as our savior, if you will, but rather look in another direction, even to the point of maybe formulating our own. And let me just say this, and I want to go to you. In fact, let's go to you, Philip. Can you add your opinion on this question?
Well, just listening to what Rhonda just said and the judge said, basically, man, this Democratic Party issue with blacks started during civil rights. It's been a lot of surveys taken based on how the blacks vote. We vote based on system, right? Very rarely do we take time to really research who we vote for. Based on some of the research I have done, most of us, according to research, according to surveys that I have read, vote based off the color of skin amongst black males. But amongst our black females, they really take time to look at the socioeconomic well-being of what we're doing to make the best vote. So a lot of us vote Democratic based on, because I guess it was like in the 60s where the Democrats were for the civil rights movement and the Republicans were, when one point in time the black vote went under the Republican Party. Just like Rhonda said, the Democratic Party, we depend on the Democratic Party for assistance. That's how this country keeps its money, is in the debt system. So, the Democratic Party has now replaced the black father with the assistance, with the WIC program, with the food stamp program, the SNAP program, so to say. So it's because the Democratic Party these things exist, and as long as we allow these things to happen in our community, then we're going to be left behind, because they're tearing down the black family at a rapid rate. So that's what I got to say on that, Judge.
Well, thank you so much to all three of you. And I truly agree with everyone's opinion in this matter. We truly have allowed the Democratic Party to be like our master, like I was talking about before, the House Negro and the Field Negro. He's become our House. We become House Negroes to the Democratic Party. And as Rhonda said, and so eloquent she put it, she reminded us that, you know, they have put us in a position where we're beholden so much to them that we are leery about being independent of them. So that's a situation we really need to look at seriously and see what we can do about organizing ourselves and doing things to help ourselves. The second question, let's go right to the second question. We elected the first black president, Barack Obama, twice, allowing him to be the leader of the free world for 8 years. What grade would you give him overall, and what grade would you give him in relationship to his impact on the African Americans, and why? So what grade would you give him overall, and what grade would you give him as it relates to his impacting the lives of African Americans in a positive way? Rhonda, I'm going to start with you.
A grade. Wow. Okay. I don't want to give him a failing grade, but I don't see anything that he did while in office that progressed us, that moved us forward. We were stagnant. So I would say a C. I mean, I wouldn't say that he did anything that actually made us go backwards, but because he didn't move us forward, we didn't progress. You know, to me, that's almost like failure. You know, but because we were stagnant for those 8 years, and because we voted him in for a second term, because he looked like us, that's the only reason, honestly, that we voted for him, because he looked like us. Nobody really, really delved into what he was going to do, what he could do for us. We didn't force him to improve anything for us. And the things that we did ask him to do, it seems as though his hands were tied, or he wasn't going to do it because he didn't want any flack from the people in his party or just in the government, period. I don't know exactly what the purpose of having him as president for 8 years was, for anything. What was the reason he was elected? Was it for the fact so we can say, okay, we had a black president, they wanted to just quiet us and make us I guess, complacent, but it didn't do anything but really ignite white Americans. If you can see what they did, they voted Trump in. They were so angry that there was a black man elected as president. It really hurt us in the long run, because look at what we have now. So I would say a C. I honestly, I probably could give them a D.
Now that's just great for African Americans. But what about his overall performance as a president? He did do something
overall,
for other groups. For other groups, he was he was a champion. For many other groups, he was a champion of them.
He was definitely a champion for a lot of people other than us.
Mm-hmm.
He put some programs in place that helped a lot of people besides us. But what he did that was good, people were more unified, I think, under him than now. That's for certain. And that more unified even before him, you know, during the Bush years. So, I mean, he made people proud to actually be an American. He made people comfortable with him, his family, as the, you know, the leader.
The first family of the country, right?
Yeah, their first family made people proud again to be Americans. I mean, they were a great example. They were, you know, a great family to look up to see them in office and the things that they did, the programming that both him and Michelle did, the children. All of that has just changed since they've left office. But
and I agree with you. I think
good anything.
Right.
Know.
I think C would be a good. I would think C would be a good grade. That's average.
it's
in school, that would be an average grade, right?
It's in the middle. It's, you know, things were stagnant, but he was a good leader, a head figure for our
country. Yeah, he was a good. He had a good image. He brought a good image to America.
He did.
Judge Brown, what do you say about the question again? Grade.
I'd rate him this way.
Mm-hmm.
For the very wealthy and LGBTQ, he would get an A.
For
the general United States, since Bush W. and St. Ron to Reagan is bad, or in Reagan's case, worse, I'd give him a D overall. And for black folks' purposes, I'd give him an F. I've been around for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 presidents. And I'd have to say he's done less for black America than anybody that's been in the White House out of those 12. I would say that he is most importantly not ADOS. That's American Descendants of Slaves.
Right.
And we still have to get someone with that legacy like all the rest of us in the White House. Now, what he did do is a very bad thing for us. When a black man gets his foot in the door and he's a first, he's got to be one bad rascal. He's got to be a Jackie Robinson who gets up in the bottom of the ninth, the Dodgers behind, one run in the last game, it looked like, of the World Series, and not having gotten the pennant in a long time, and steal second base, third base, and steal home with two strikes and three balls on the batter to tie the game up, send it in overtime, and the Dodgers go on and take the pennant. We've got to have somebody like that, who also in his history, and nobody knows this, he only played baseball because the Army court-martialed him. You know what for? Because he was taking the bus home after escorting a fellow officer's wife home. And as he was coming back to the base in Texas in 1943, he refused to move to the back of the bus. He had his duty 45, 1911 on. And the court-martial testimony and evidence was that he had that 45 out cocked round in the chamber saying somebody's going to die tonight besides me. Now, that's what opened up baseball. We did not have a Jackie Robinson that looked like us getting in the White House. We had a half-stepping GOP, that is Republican-backed, conservative elephant in jackass clothes, who had come from one of the richest households in the world, who was a long-term family friend of two of the worst presidents we've had otherwise. And
wow,
that slammed a lot of doors for us. And people were saying, okay, let's see what the black man does. And he comes out to be the worst president in 80-some bloody years that we've had. So that did not open the doors like Jackie Robinson did. It didn't open the doors like Thurgood Marshall did. It's like if the first black man on the Supreme Court had been this handkerchief head house Negro, with due respect, Uncle Clarence Thomas. That's what you're talking about. It has been at the first end brother in the NFL, Kenny Washington, with the Rams, was not what he was. You wouldn't have seen any more brothers in the NFL if it wasn't that Don Barksdale, the first brother in the NBA with the Lakers, was not what he was. You wouldn't have been seeing Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson, or you wouldn't have seen Kareem either. See,
well,
you've got
to
open
Brown.
The doors, right? I use a sports metaphor.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
and,
that. Because you're
I
absolutely right.
F for us. On F.
Okay.
Well,
Philip, what would you say? What grade would you give our former president?
Well, the judge said it best with the way he broke it down.
Yes, he did.
Like he gave, like, those grades were very, very accurate. And so just for my just to break it down on my opinion, man, there's three categories I look at when Obama ran that was big for us in the African-American community. The first category was income and wealth. The second category was education. The third category was unemployment. And then if you wanted to add a fourth one in there, it would have been health care. Now, just to break this down, when Obama was in power and he was the commander-in-chief, the wealth gap between blacks and whites, America, it grew. The gap grew. The wealth gap grew between blacks and whites during his presidency. That's under income and wealth. Education, the academic achievement gap between black and whites remained stubbornly high. And I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon under any president. And that's for education. Unemployment. The unemployment rate soared back up. It dropped in his first term, and then it soared in his second term. And then health care. We all know about the Obamacare, so we all know how that turned out. So basically what the judge said was very accurate, and I agree. We did not – I don't know anyone who's really singing praise who has as an African American who really sings praise about President Obama, besides him being the first with brown skin to be commander in chief. But as far as things for us as a community to help us, you know, improve on things that's going on in this country, no. So, hey, I agree with the judge.
Well, thank you, Philip. And thank all three of you for answering that question. I just want to just say a couple of things. He certainly did champion, as Judge Brown said, the LGBTQ group. He championed. One thing was interesting to me. He always felt that reparations for descendants of slaves was unfeasible and would seem to be unfair to other minority groups. Yet he was the one under his administration and the federal government that approved $500 million in settlement to 17 Native American tribes, and which I consider as reparation for that Native American, which I agree with was the right thing to do. But to have such a problem with standing up for black folk, and particularly those who are slaves, who were slaves and descendants of the same, you had a problem with standing up for them. You thought it was unfeasible. You thought it would be a problem for other minority groups and how they would view it. And yet you, without apology. You just stood boldly and affirmed and even supported and got past a measure that helped the Native American. You promised him before you became president you were going to do it. You kept good on that promise. And so it just seems to be there's some things that he stood strong for, and as Judge Joe Brown and Rhonda and Phillips said, they were not African-American considerations, and there's some things that he backed off on or did not press forward and allowed his own insecurities to not proceed with it. The next question that we want to have, that we want to deal with tonight, we only got 20 minutes now, so we would ask that you be concise with your questions, your answers. But if not, we just have to make this one and maybe another one your last one. But the third one is very important to me because it deals with where we're going now. We now have two black candidates, quote, unquote, black candidates, Senator Kamala Harris from California and Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey, who have announced their candidacy for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States in 2020. What do you know about each of them and their records, and what should be our main concern when or if we decide to support either of them, their records or the fact? So we're going to begin with, in this case, we're going to give them to you, Philip. What is your position on that? On these two candidates that are running.
Right. So we got two Democrats, African-Americans, so to say, brown Democrats, running, Kamala Harris. I believe she's the Senator of California right now, and Cory Booker. But one thing about Kamala Harris, I know we have talked about her on previous shows about what she's done when she was the district attorney in California as far as the truancy. I believe the judge brought that up as far as what she did with truancy, but what I look at right now, what got my attention with her is the how she supports the. She just had an interview Monday supporting the cannabis, trying to make it legal throughout the nation, in all 50 states. So I'm interested to see how she made a statement that she believes that cannabis use makes everyone happier, and the world needs to be a happier place. So that's her on that. I don't know exactly how she would fare economically, but by doing that, to me, that's an economical move based on where the cannabis business is going right now. It is booming. You see the cigarette companies starting to get into the business, so it's going to happen. It will really boost the economy of this country by legalizing it throughout the nation. Cory Booker, I don't know too much about Cory Booker besides him wanting to raise, I believe, make prescription drugs more expensive. But as far as what he stands for, his motto, his purpose for running, I have not actually had the chance to really get into his business. But I'm interested to see if any of these candidates turn out to be better than what we had at first, which was President Obama, who we put in the White House. And on this term with these two, I'm really going to really take time to study these two and not try to make a vote just because their skin is black. So
that's very good. I thank you, Philip, for that, because that's a good way to look at it. You're not going to do like we all did the first time around with Obama and just look at skin color as a prerequisite for our voting for them. Let me just say this much about each of them. Each of them do have problems, and I'm sure when Judge Brown comes up, he will describe some of the problems that each of them had. They're both profess to be progressives, but their records certainly do not indicate that they are progressive. We're going to go to Rhonda, then we're going to go to Judge Brown on this issue about these two candidates. Rhonda, and then Judge Brown concerning Senator Kamala Harris and Cory Booker's candidacy for the office of President of the United States.
Well, first of all, it's so early in the race that to me doesn't even really matter. People fall out of the race as months go on, as the year goes on. I mean, for me, I see it as a publicity campaign more than anything. I don't think that once people get to know either one, that they're going to take them serious as candidates. I really don't. I think they have a personal agenda, both of them. I don't see it going any further, you know, to where either one are going to be nominated, you know, on the ticket. I don't think so myself. That might be my personal opinion. But neither one of them, Kamala or Cory Booker, I don't see either one of them having a record strong enough to run for president and actually win it. I don't see it. And if you want to go back to what Philip said, you know, we don't want to just look at skin color, oh, they look like us, and make the same mistake, you know, do the same thing over again, because that obviously did not work, and we don't want to do that. But, you know, my thing is the whole presidential campaign, I'm back to where I was in the beginning. It's whether you're Republican or Democrat, it really, to me, does not help us as a people. So we have to figure something else out. I mean, I know it's, you know, status quo, you know, can we make a change in time? Probably not, but we need to work towards it. We definitely do. We need to make our voices heard. We need to start taking action, moving towards changing it. Because if we just settle and say, okay, we're looking at these two candidates, who are we going to choose? I mean, we're back at square one. We're back in the beginning of where we were many, many years ago. I mean, we're given two parties to choose from. They're not helping us at all. And why would we move forward in the same direction when we don't see any change?
I thank you for that. That's a good observation. Why would we really take any of these candidates, whether they are viable candidates as far as these parties are concerned or not? They're going to take us in the same direction that we've always been, which is a downward spiral every step of the way. We always are last. No matter how you look at it, no matter what progress is made, we still are on the bottom of the totem pole. Judge Brown, what do you say about this?
Well, Kamala Harris is not black. Her claim to blackness is based on her father, who was one half Jamaican. And that one half of the Jamaican was composed of mostly other ethnicities from around the English Commonwealth, including some from India who were Hindu, with a very, very small percentage of black in him. And her mother was all the way live Indian Hindu Brahmin. Now, Kamala Harris was born in San Francisco, so that qualifies her to run for president. But she was raised in Canada, kindergarten through high school, 12th grade. And she has no understanding of the U.S. situation. Her cultural background, being a Hindu Brahmin, predisposes her to some awful things. The Brahmin are the top caste in India, and they still support what is called untouchability. In other words, at the very bottom, they have what they call untouchables, who are unclean and viewed as subhuman in the same way that the Nazis viewed the Jews and Slavs prior to World War II and during World War II. In San Francisco, where she was district attorney, and when she was an assistant DA, and then when she became Attorney General for the state of California, her behavior showed that she was trying to put African-American youth, black young men, in the category of being untouchables. The Hindu Brahmin caste is historically considered the black African, which translates over to us as Kafirs. That is their N-word. they have a very negative view on Africans or African descendants, and that would include us. She also has a bad history, like Munchen, who was head of a bank that was being indicted by the DA's office in San Diego, L.A. County, Sacramento, and other places around the state for defrauding multiple, several tens of thousands of California citizens. Kamala Harris used her position to block prosecution of Munson, who was one of Trump's nominees for a position in his administration. This also has to be looked at in the face of the fact that Munson made a huge series of donations to the MACs through himself and his wife and various other PACs to Kamala Harris's campaign funds for running for state attorney general and for U.S. senator. That looks like rank old-time corruption, and that will be a scandal. Since she has no American descendants of slavery in her, she's not one of us. She's just another fraud who, by the way, looks complexion-wise like your typical Hindu Brahmin. They have the same complexion she does. They have the same facial features she does. They have the same body build she does and the same kind of long, coarse hair that she does. So she only is claiming that she's black because it's convenient for her current political purposes to take advantage of the fact that the typical thing she actually is, though non-black, has an appearance similar to black folk. What she actually is as a Brahmin is what Hitler was talking about the mythical Aryan super race that you hear the skinheads and the Nazis talk about now. But they weren't blonde-haired, blue-eyed. They were Hindu Brahmins with the same kind of complexion Kamala Harris has, the same kind of features she has, same kind of body build, same kind of hair. Now,
Judge Brown, we want to move along quickly, but I want you to talk about Cory Booker very quickly, if you could.
Yeah, I am. I was getting ready to say now.
Oh, okay, good.
Cory
Booker. Thank you, Judge.
Cory Booker is Obama-lite. Mm-hmm. He at least grew up in the United States. But if frankly, he's another one of these house Negroes that Malcolm X was talking about. And as amply illustrated by his questions questions he's responded to about whether he would push a black plan or platform or agenda and how he hemming hard on it, he's a house Negro who would basically advance the interest of his masters rather than his own. And in that sense, you got to look at people's real backgrounds and not just the color, because the great Thurgood Marshall said, in reference to his knowledge of the impending nomination of Clarence Thomas, he said, a black snake will bite you just as quickly as a white, and his poison is just as strong. So when we look at Cory Booker, we look back at Obama, and we've already downed Obama. And one last comment on that. When he was running against McCain, you have to deal with the fact that McCain had a full-fledged ADOS daughter-in-law, and his grandchildren were more qualified as black American, looked more black American, and certainly had the ancestry than his opponent Barack Obama did. So, you know, you have to look at the thing that a grandfather has a totally different perspective when his grandchildren are part of something else than he might not have otherwise. So we looked at appearances to determine our vote and got nothing. And we will certainly get nothing out of Kamala Harris, who has demonstrated that fact in her long years as a district attorney, assistant district attorney, and state attorney general. She had every ample opportunity to do something for us and did not. She did no social engineering. Cory Booker has been afraid of the thing, the term black, except when it helps him out. So we look at people as what are they trying to do? Put them up so we will stay in the Democratic Party? It's like, no, that's the same kind of consideration of all of the black slave uprisings from Denmark VC to Nat Turner to all of the ones we don't hear about. They got turned in by the house Negroes who wanted more corn pone and some buttered biscuits and turned in their own people.
Okay, my friend.
So we just can't go for that.
We have 5 minutes, and I want you to deal with the last question very quickly, maybe 2 minutes apiece, maybe a little less if you can. But I want to ask the question, what demands that promote issues that positively impact the lives of black America would you make on the leadership of the Democratic Party and the candidates that they choose to run for high office before you would seriously support this party? So what would you demand of the party? What would you demand on the platform this year, 2020? Not just rhetoric, not just they're just TV bites, but what you would put in the platform, what we're going to go by, what the leadership will go by, step by step. And what would you put in there that would at least one, because we don't have time for all of them, at least one issue that directly impacts the lives of African Americans, not every American, but African Americans in this case, because that's what the other ones did. What would you say to that? We're going to begin with Judge Brown, Philip, and then Rhonda, you can conclude. What would you ask them? What positive impact would you have? What issue would you promote?
I'll be very brief. Education,
okay.
Employment opportunity, vocational training, prison reform, and ending welfare as it is now and replacing it with something that's set up for an emergency situation rather mm-hmm. than creating a dependency, which can be ended perhaps by making it a work or study fair proposition. We also need reform in the courts. We need some big reform in what's going on in terms of how the police are managed since they receive a lot of federal funds, and I would expect somebody to speak to that. So that would be the top of the hierarchy in terms of what I would say. Also, particularly as it impacts us in our lack of financial resources, some real reform in health care.
Okay. Philip?
Yep, and I'll be real quick just to piggyback off the judge. Education and the police situation. The police need somebody policing the police and the education. We do need to see have better resources. We do need more resources in our education program, in our higher education program, as well as the elementary and high schools here in this country amongst the African-American neighborhoods.
Thank you, Philip. Rhonda.
Yes. As I stated before on a previous program, education is number one. The judge covered it all. He really did. Prison reform, education, welfare reform. But like I stated, I do feel that trades need for it in high schools like they used to be.
Yes.
Because that's the only way our community is going to move forward, becoming business owners, and being really trained in trades, because we are so much in debt when it comes to college education because of the loans that our children are taking out. It's hurting us. It's hurting our youth. It's hurting people who've already been out of college for 20 years. Education reform, definitely, and financial reform when it comes to college and putting the trades back in the school, but definitely prison reform as well.
Well, thank you all for being my guest tonight. Thank you, Valerie, for allowing me the opportunity to be the host of this particular program, this special Tuesday evening primetime program. We thank you all for being here. I would like to have this happen again. There are a couple of questions one question I did ask that we don't have time for tonight. But there's a few other questions I would like to get started as well. And even revisit this down the road. How I have Camilla, how I have Corey, other things that we've discussed tonight. What is the progress on those things? So hopefully we can get ourselves together again as a panel and address these issues and other issues in the future. Again, Valerie, thank you for this opportunity. Thank you for the listeners that listen so intently. We want to, next time we have a meeting, we want to open up the phones, but we only had an hour, and the discussion was so intense and so worthy of being heard that we did not feel it was right for us to cut it off and to leave you hanging with information that was vital to your deciding on what we should do as a people as relates to the Democratic Party. Again, divided loyalties, black or Democrat. Thank you, Valerie.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
Thank you to
Thank you, Ms. Valerie.
You're welcome. We do have time if anybody wants to give their contact information or have any final words. We have plenty of time.
We'll
plenty of time for you to do that.
Okay, well, let's go around the table. Judge Brown, give me your contact. Give us your contact information, your programming, what programs you are on, and all the rest. Anything you would like to share with us so we can jot it down and move it?
Very briefly, I tweet on Twitter. And Judge Joe Brown TV, and I don't have a blue check. And I am on Bounce TV 2 hours a morning, Monday through Friday, with reruns for the last 15 years of my show. And there's a new one I'm coming out with shortly, which will be known as Hot Topics, where we will get into such things as we got into tonight. I'll be the moderator on that one, and there will be some ladies on there with me, and I guess I'll be the rooster in the hen house. We might even bring Valerie in there to make some comments every now and then, but that will be on the weekend. So check it out. I'm here with everybody trying to convey what I know before I pass on so we can keep the movement going. Power to the people.
Power to the people. Rhonda, you want to share your information?
Absolutely. I have a radio show that airs Monday through Friday on freeagentradio.com and power102jams.com, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the focus is always on community. We also have recording artists, actors, actresses, authors on the program, so you'll find that very interesting. Please reach out to me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Rhonda Supreme on all platforms. And also, but not least, I am an administrator for Team Hip Hop, which was formed 2 years ago out of New York City. We have performing artists and rappers and dancers who are actually holding master classes throughout the year on career choices, health and nutrition, agriculture, alternatives to violence in many of the major cities. So we're going to be in New York City. So please reach out to us about Team Hip Hop. We do have a Twitter page. And also you can reach me at RhondaSupreme, gmail.com. If you have any questions and you want to bring us to your school, your college, your community to speak, we have Dougie Fresh, DJ Scratch, Grand Mixer, DXP. He's a 3-time Grammy winner. He's doing masterclasses on film scoring and production. We have Easy AD from the Cold Crush Brothers, Zed G from Ultramagnetic, and we just had Sway from Sway in the Morning join as well. So please reach out to us.
And Rhonda, you got some things this weekend. If you would allow her.
Oh, for Valentine's Day. Yes.
For Valerie. Valentine's Day. Shame on you.
Valentine's Day. Okay. Yes, you do show us much love. But we are having an event in Philadelphia, PA, 5549 Germantown Avenue at Treasures Banquet Hall. We are having Tribute to the Legends perform, Firestorm Band, with the Boss Man, Masha T, Kathy Kent, and comedian Ms. Darkchild. So it's a soul R&B comedy event, and I am the host of the show Friday, February 15th, 8 p.m. sharp. Tickets are only $25, so $30 at the door, but come on out. It's cabaret style. Bring your own food. Bring your own bottle. We're going to have a good time, old school R&B, and a dance party after the show. So if you can make it, just reach out to me. I have tickets.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Philip, why don't you give us your information?
Hey, simple. Keep it short and sweet. CeeLo the Great, all social media platforms. That's PH like phone, ELOTHEGREAT. Just get with me on any one of the platforms. If not, just Google me. I'll pop up. Just reach out to me. Find me. Whatever you need, I got you.
Well, thank you. And my information, for your information, is Gerald Scott on Facebook. That's my profile page, Facebook. And then I have a show every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. It's called Real Talk with the G-Man. This was Real Talk with the G-Man Primetime, but that's my regular show on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. And I just want to advertise my wife's program. She has a program on Mondays and Fridays at 6 a.m., both Eastern Standard Time. Her program is called I Win. And you can get her at Teresa Jeanette Scott on Facebook. And we also have an Instagram and we have a Twitter, but I don't know either account, my own or hers. So that's where we are now.
Do you tweet or do you twit? Which one is it? This is Scott.
I tweet, twit, and do a little twerking too. And do a little twerk too.
I'm messing with Judge Brown. That's all I'm doing.
And I twerk as well. Mm-hmm. I do a little twerk.
Hey.
So I tweet, twerk, and twit.
No twerking, Mr. Scott.
It's like this. If you tweet on Twitter, does that make you a twit?
That's good. Oh, well. Well, thank you so much. Thank you all so very much for allowing me the opportunity to host such a prestigious group of men and women. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
you.
Thank you.
You're
is your wife 240290? Is that Bishop Scott? I see a couple other numbers, but
no, hers is 356. You say 356?
Oh, okay.
Actually, I'm on the same
no.
line.
Oh, okay. That's her right there.
Oh.
That's my wife. Lady T,
yes,
Lady T.
Yes,
talk to us, Lady T.
Yes, there we go.
Hi, everybody. This is an excellent program tonight. Excellent program. I did learn some things on this program. I'm not political at all, but I did learn some things on this program tonight. So thank you to all who are on the panel and to my husband who did a very excellent job.
Thank you, my dear. And Valerie, may I read the quote from Malcolm X that I was looking for earlier? Do I have time for that?
Sure.
As we leave?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he said. So you have two types of Negro, the old type and the new type. Most of you know the old type. When you read about him in history during slavery, he was called Uncle Tom. He was the house Negro. And during slavery, you had two Negroes. You had the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro usually lived close to his master. He dressed like his master. He wore his master's secondhand clothes. He ate food that his master left on the table, and he lived in his master's house, probably in the basement or the attic, but he still lived in the master's house. So whenever that house Negro identified himself, he always identified himself in the same sense that his master identified himself. When his master said, "We have good food," the house Negro would say, "Yes, we have plenty of good food. We have plenty of good food." When the master said that we have a fine home, the Negro, house Negro, would say, "Yes, we have a fine home here." When the master would be sick and the house Negro identified himself so much with the master, he said, "What's the matter, boss? We sick?" His master's pain was in pain. It was his pain. And it hurt him more than his master to be sick. When the house started burning down, that type of Negro would fight harder to put the master's house out than the master himself would. But then you had another Negro out in the field. The house Negro was in the minority. The masses, the field Negroes, were the masses. They were in the majority. When the master got sick, they prayed that he died. If his house caught on fire, they prayed for a wind to come along and fan the blaze. If someone came to the house Negro and said, "Let's go, let's separate," naturally the Uncle Tom would say, "Go where? What could I do without boss? But where would I live? How would I dress? who would look out for me? That's the house Negro. But if you went to the field Negro and said, let's go, let's separate, he wouldn't ask you where or how. He'd say, yeah, let's go. And that one ended right there. So now you have the 20th century type of house Negro, or 21st century, a 20th century Uncle Tom. He's just as much an Uncle Tom today as Uncle Tom was 100 and 200 years ago. Only he's a modern Uncle Tom. That Uncle Tom wore a handkerchief around his head. This Uncle Tom wears a top hat. He's sharp. He dresses just like you do. He speaks the same phraseology, the same language. He tries to speak it better than you do. He speaks with the same accent, same diction. And when you say your army, he says our army. He doesn't get anybody to defend him. But anytime you say we, he says we. Our president, our government, our Senate, our congressman, our this and our that. And he hasn't even got a seat in that R, even at the end of the line. So this is the 20th century Negro. Whenever you say you in the personal pronoun in the singular or in the plural, he uses it right along with you. When you say you're in trouble, he says, yes, we're in trouble. But that's another kind of Negro. But there's another kind of black man on the scene. If you say you're in trouble, he'll say, yes, you're in trouble. He doesn't identify with you, and he does not understand the plight, your plight whatsoever. That's from January 23rd, 1963, Malcolm X. And I'm going to tell you the truth. Things haven't changed much here in the 21st century. Let me just add that. It hasn't changed much in the 21st century.
No, they haven't. I want to share on a final note, thank you to everybody who were part of the panel today and everybody who tuned in, and to Wifey for letting us know that she was in the background. I appreciate that. I want to leave you with and my new quote, my new favorite person, and I'm going to plaster this everywhere because it makes a lot of sense. This quote is by Dr. John Henrik Clark. I think it sums up tonight perfectly. John Henrik Clark says, I only debate my equals, all others I teach. I love that. I hope you love that too. Valerie Denise Jones, big exclusive. This is a special edition, guys. We'll be back. If you got any questions, please, please, please make sure that you visit their social media pages, tweet, whatever you do. Go to the pages, get the information, and share the hashtags. That's more important than anything else. God bless you guys. I hope you have a great rest of the night and an even better week. Happy Valentine's Day. Happy Valerentine's Day, whatever you want to call it. Just make sure that you are with someone that you love or can love or can love on or, I don't know, shoot. Anyway, have a great day, guys. I will see
you. Thank you.
Definitely so. See you on the other side.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to share our links on your social media. We love you to life. Please enjoy your day. Give me a J. Give me an O. Give me an E. What's that spell? Yeah.